she comes back. What if there's no way of moving back? What when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. I'm in the studio with investigator Shelley Wright. How are you, Shelley?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing good. And Sam, the animal steel. Sam.
Hey.
Yeah, we missed a Halloween episode, but not for lack of trying. We had a really nasty storm blow through here the first of that week. We had it all set up. We had the seance candle ready to go. We had our ghost all picked out, and we were going to do some field recording.
And then we had a flash flood.
Yeah, a flash flood and gusts, man. I was in the library that day looking out the window and just seeing the wind absolutely beating the trees, and the limbs were all down in the parking lot afterwards. Yeah, that was not good good cemetery ghoul weather. I think even the zombies stayed in their crypts that day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my apologies for not doing the fresh Halloween bit, but along that line of research, and we'll dip into this in later segments tonight, the strange swirl of synchronicity surrounding some of these characters that we've stirred up continues. We had the seance candle lit here in the studio the last time we did a live show, and I just want to tell you that I think we woke some things up, not just a spirit, but some spirits, and not all of them pleasant, because
really?
I went through a few very dark days there, and I'll talk about it a little bit tonight.
See what happens when you start messing with them things?
That's always warned us about in Sunday school, you know?
Well, I brought him a candle tonight, but it wasn't a seance candle.
Well, the last time, and I want to apologize to Sam, last time, and I listened back to the podcast, which you can do. You can go to speakingofstrange.com, and there's a little podcast title right there in the middle at the top of the page, and you'll click that and you'll be able to scroll back down through the dates and get show descriptions, hourly show descriptions for the most part, and then the podcasts and downloads there that you can just avail yourself of. The history of Speaking of Strange, it's part of the Speaking of Strange Akashic Record there in the podcast archive. And Shelley had come in with the purple seance candle and said, I brought you a candle, and presented it to Sam, and I just helped myself to it. I didn't catch that. I didn't catch that Shelley handed the candle to Sam, and he was thinking, because we gift each other in here.
We do.
Especially Sam, he's brought in a hardbound copy of The Tales of Algernon Blackwood. Very awesome, Sam. We gift each other here in the studio. Shelley brought carrot cake. So it's pretty special, and we're good friends here, but Shelley handed off this candle to Sam, and then I snatched it out of his hand and unpeeled it and lit it over. And then when I'm listening to this story, I'm like, here's Sam saying, hey, that you took my candle. And I thought he was just goofing around, but then sorry, I took your seance candle. But I thought the seance candle was kind of for all of us.
Well, Sam would not want anything to do with the seance, and I knew that. But I brought him an extra special candle to make up for it tonight.
Red stiletto?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, that's the uh-huh. Crazy loving candle.
Uh-huh. Wild, hot, jungle sex. Yeah.
Oh.
You would rather have that than a seance candle,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
I don't want to mess with none of that other stuff.
This is sounding like an infomercial, and in a way it is. the Red Hot Jungle Sex infomercial for the...
glad to be a spokesperson.
For the Red Stiletto candle, available at Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road, and your proprietress, Miss Shelley Wright. How's everything at Nevermore, Shell?
It is very good. Things are going really well. I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving and to Christmas, and I have all kinds of fun little gifty things, and yeah.
What's some of your recent favorite acquisitions aside from Red Hot Jungle Sex candles?
Well, you know what? The men just love that. They really love that one. But, you know, I've got these wonderful little blessing kits that are a set of three votives for whatever you need help with, for good karma or for jinx removing or financial success or anything like that. And then I also recently got some herbal blessing candles and some, what do I call them? What is the name of them? I know one of them is Intuition and one of them is Goddess. Another is Angel. They're fun. They're wonderful, wonderful candles. And I think they're going to make really great gifts.
Some interesting themed and purpose candles. I hear some people refer to them as purpose candles. And you can check them out all in the showroom of Nevermore Mystical Arts. If you've never been there, you got to get down there. If you have been there, drop back by because there's new inventory all the time. 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. And I believe that's exit 50 off of I-4.
51.
Is it 51?
Mm-hmm.
I stand corrected. It's exit 51 and away from Biltmore, just a couple miles down there across the street from Retro Lube and next door to Wright's Coin Shop, and we'll talk a little bit more about Wright's Coin Shop a little later in the show, but I take it they're busy as ever.
Crazy busy.
Yeah.
So, again, if anybody needs gift ideas, I would hop in there. Because
people are already thinking about Christmas. Is it too early to think about Christmas? Is it too early to put up the Christmas tree? I'm getting pictures of my friends, people I went to high school with, that I'm almost ashamed because they've got Christmas decorations up before Thanksgiving.
Don't be
okay,
ashamed.
No.
It's just happened.
Did we just skip Thanksgiving? Did that just happen? Or?
Well, I can't really criticize because with me it's Halloween year-round.
Oh, you know? With me too. Me too. But with Thanksgiving, I figure, all right, I can put up the Christmas decorations any sooner and you already feel like you've somehow lost the battle and that you're behind and you're never going to get the Christmas stuff done. But I think if you can get, all right, put up the decorations like the day after Thanksgiving and then get the Christmas shopping done as quickly as possible, and then maybe you have a shot at actually enjoying Christmas and New Year's and not stressing.
Agreed. Well, I can drop a real short story on you here about it ties in with the Halloween candy business. I was going to ask if you guys satiated your sweet tooth over the Halloween holidays. I certainly did. I indulged in all the junk food. That's why dads take their kids trick or treating so they can eat the chocolate.
Yeah, that's it.
But I also asked my son what he thinks the worst piece of Halloween candy is, and he said red Twizzlers. He does not like the red Twizzlers, and he pulled one out of the bag and handed it to me, and I chewed on it, and I said, "Yeah, this does taste just a little bit like flavored plastic."
Ew.
Red Twizzlers.
Remember wax lips?
Wax lips, God.
Oh, or what about the wax soda bottles?
The bottles, yeah.
I remember those.
Those interesting.
You'd bite them off and just like, you know, drink that little tiny bit of juice out of there, whatever.
I'm going to throw you one word out there, and you guys chime in if you know it. Chunky.
Yeah.
You know Chunky?
It was a square. It had raisins and nuts.
Yeah, Sam knows Chunky
very
well.
You lost me at raisins.
How about a Goo Goo cluster?
Oh, man. A couple weeks before Halloween, I got the idea of Chunky in my head. And the reason was Chunky has this silver wrapper with red letters. And somebody had bought a box, like a big case of garbage bags at the pizza shop. that were called Hunky or Husky. Yeah, maybe it was Husky. Yeah, it was a big silver box of Husky garbage bags, but the font and everything, when I saw it sitting on the filing cabinet as I walked by, I said, ooh, there's a whole case of Chunky. That's awesome. I don't know who got a line on an entire case of Chunky bars, but, and then I looked and it was just Husky garbage bags and can't really chew on that. Well, you could, but you wouldn't find the satisfaction of chewing on a black garbage bag, I think. You would from a Chunky bar. I couldn't remember the last time or if I had ever tried Chunky, and I went on a quest and I found that a lot of places don't carry Chunky.
Yeah,
I had to go to the drugstore. I had to go to CVS to buy a Chunky bar, and I ate it and I loved it. And I thought, I've never had this before because I didn't remember the raisins in the chocolate. I love chocolate covered raisins.
Another Chunky where there was a silver wrapper? Was there not another for a small time, like a gold wrapper Chunky or something?
Gold wrapper Chunky. What's the scoop on that?
Listeners,
you can fill us in your Chunky experiences at speakingofstrange.com. Email me or go on the Speaking of Strange Facebook page and drop us a line about your Chunky experiences. This is just riveting radio.
I'm looking it up now. Maybe
gold,
it was just a figment of my
gold
imagination.
Gold wrapper Chunky, but the standard silver wrapper Chunky, I when I finally tracked one down and ate it and couldn't find it, or I couldn't satisfy myself that I'd ever had this before, I was like, man, this is good. And I went home, and there was a little brown paper bag on the table at my house from Cracker Barrel, and I said, what's this? And I opened it up, and there was a huge Chunky bar in it, silver wrapper Chunky bar, and I had talked about it on Riffin, my little volunteer rock and roll show, and I thought my wife, and I had even said on that show, my wife never listens to this, and then I went home and I found this Chunky bar, and I thought, did you stop at Cracker Barrel and get me a Chunky bar? And she said, no, Jesse's friends gave that to him for his birthday.
What?
Huh?
That's crazy.
What about the Chunky synchronicity?
It's not an everyday candy bar. It's not a Snickers bar.
No.
It's not like something that you just, oh, here, I got you.
I think maybe the paper bag with the Chunky bar had been sitting on the table at my house, but I had not looked in it, at least not intentionally snooped in it, to see what kind of candy Jesse had gotten for his birthday. But at the same time, I got this strange compulsion to seek out a Chunky bar. I ended up bargaining with Jesse, and I ate his Chunky bar as well. It's Speaking of Strange.
Speaking of Chunky with Vance.
And we'll do more segments on confections when we get back right after these messages. Hang tight.
They say that we're wasting.
Welcome back. Joshua P. Warren speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock, in the studio with Shelley Wright and Sam the Animal Steel. We were talking a little bit about Chunky and your Halloween goodies last segment. And I got to bring you, we got to talk a little more about Halloween. Why not? Shelley, spoiler alert for those who haven't listened to Joshua P. Warren's podcast for November 1st, which he titles My Secret Mission last night. You can hear that by going to joshuapwarren.com, no period after the P, joshuapwarren.com at the top. Click here for Joshua's new podcast, and you get the archive of all the Joshua P. Warren Daily podcasts thus far, and it's been running for a couple of weeks, so there's a pretty good string of them. But if you'll get down to November 1st, My Secret Mission last night, here's the reveal. Shelley, what was Joshua P. Warren's secret mission on Halloween night?
His secret mission was to go trick-or-treating with me. It was a social experiment.
Not taking any kids as cover or anything, but you two actually being the trick-or-treaters.
We were the kids. I was more successful at it. It was harder for him because he's got that 6'2" frame. And he had to try and bend down into a little kid. Yeah.
They gave Josh candy.
They did. But here's the thing. He laid ground rules. He's like, you are the only one that is going to talk. I'm like, all right, I can do that. Because I sounded kind of like a kid. Yeah. So, yeah.
Say trick or treat for us.
Trick or treat.
Yeah. Shelley could pass for a valid trick or treater. I took Sylvan out to Kimberly out in Grove Park. As you had suggested, you guys go. I like to go there just because every other house is decorated up big and there's hundreds of people on the street.
Oh, it's so much fun there.
I don't think that the candy take there is as heavy. I mean, but there are enough places that even if they just give you a couple pieces of candy at each house, it adds up. But we were talking during the break, and I'm with Sam. You got to hit places that aren't just overwhelmed with people. And I think the old driveway trick, I used this a couple times with great success, because when delivering pizzas, you find some little tucked away neighborhoods, and there's always just one or two lonely houses that you can tell the people love Halloween because they're decorated up so big, but they're not necessarily pedestrian friendly, or like I say, they're tucked away. And so we kind of went mercy trick-or-treating a couple of times by getting in the car and driving to these specific houses. And I would take my kids there, and I would tell them, these people really are in the spirit of Halloween, and I have a feeling that they're just not getting the traffic. So in every case, my boys would walk up to the door, and they would say, we don't get that many trick-or-treaters. We got plenty of candy here. You got, you know, massive hands full.
Right.
So do a little scouting, do a little prep, and choose your trick-or-treating grounds wisely. But I still got to do Kimberly. There's a couple houses up at Baird Street off of, or is it Baird Avenue, off of Merriman there, or off Charlotte Street. As you turn on Charlotte and pass the gas station there, or maybe it's a block after Chestnut on the right. There are a couple houses up in there that decorate in grand style. One of the houses, it looks like a set piece from a horror movie or something. The guy has put so many special effects and fog machines, and he's got bats and ghosts on wires that continually patrol the yard. And in the back porch, he's got the ghost of the blue girl. It's like a ghostly figure that rises and falls in the back porch there with a blue light emanating from
Very
it. It's really cool. And he's got a graveyard. The whole front yard is a graveyard with tombstones.
So he's not still trying to work his illusions. He's Halloween was it. That was
that is his yeah, that is his thing. And the guy always does a great job. And right across the street from him is a little more humble home, but a family. I think the kids are there and participating in putting on the show. They've got some scary stuff in the yard. Baby doll heads with stitches and eyes gouged out, and you kind of creepy stuff like that. And they had this this effigy, we'll say, on the porch. The first time I ever went a few years ago, it had some sort of motor or something in it, so it was just flopping. It looked kind of like a vivisect or like twisted. The joints were not human. It was like a humanoid figure, but the arms and legs were just twisted around, and it was just laying there on the porch flopping around making noise like it was writhing in pain.
Wow.
And one of the most terrifying things, and you don't really notice it until you step up on the porch and then this thing starts flopping around on the floorboard, and you look over and see this hideous creature flopping around, and we call him Floppy. Yeah. Me and the kids, and scared Jesse to death. Jesse does not like to go to the Floppy house.
Poor
but
Jesse.
The Floppy house, and I hope they're listening, because you guys nail it every Halloween, and you know what? They're very generous with the candy. They come out with a platter full of full-sized candy bars, and they say, just take four.
Just take four.
Four full-size candy bars, man.
This is on Baird Street?
That's up Baird. Absolutely.
We should have gone there.
Just down the block from Princess Anne. What's the street that the Princess Anne Hotel is on, the corner of Baird and... Anyway, you kind of know the neighborhood. Keep it in mind, folks. Patrol that one next Halloween, and you'll be glad you did. You heard it here on Speaking of Strange. It's our Halloween wrap-up, dropping some knowledge for you folks. I haven't listened to all of the Joshua P. Warren daily podcasts. That should be part of my job description as host of Speaking of Strange. But those that I have listened to, very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them run just a few minutes, 4 or 5 minutes. Some run 10-15 minutes. You say he goes on a rant about trick or treating with Shelley for.
I don't know. It might be 20 minutes.
It might it's be one of the longer ones.
It was a good one. It was. It's worth taking a listen to.
Oh my goodness. I think we can broach the subject. We were talking about lighting a candle in a graveyard. I don't want to go into the details too much in case the potential to do this is still there. But my idea was that this person could give us some information on what became of Claude Calloway, Joshua's great uncle. Granduncle, some people would say, brother to Joshua's grandmother, who vanished without a trace in about 1935 or so. This person would have a connection to Claude Calloway, who, through my research, I discovered was not just a young man. When Josh told the story, I kind of assumed that he was just a young single man, but he had been married a couple of times, lost his first wife during the Spanish Influenza, 1918. Second wife couldn't provide for their children after he disappeared and gave them up for adoption. A very tragic sort of situation, but there is a grave in the neighborhood, very close to the studio here, that I thought we could consult the spirit of this person and maybe gain some insight into what happened to Claude Calloway. So that was it. That was my idea. And we might still need to follow through with that.
Well, you know, tonight
it's very
night.
Dark,
it's
isn't it?
Very dark. It's cool. It's windy. It's very overcast, like it's going to start raining at any moment. This is a perfect time.
Well, unfortunately, the only candle we have to light in the cemetery is the red hot jungle sex candle.
I got to read the poem on the back.
He does.
Oh. But anyway, I'll tell you.
You don't want to be stuck out in the dark with me and that candle.
I'll tell you what the spirit who felt slighted by our non-appearance the week of Halloween did to me.
What?
When we come back. Yeah. She's craving attention and disappointed we did not show up.
flash flood.
I'll give you the scoop when we get back after the break. This is the one and only Speaking of Strange. This is Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange. Yeah, talking about some strange incidents that I experienced personally. And again, we were talking about extreme cases of paranoia. I mean, maybe for lack of a better broad description during the break. And sometimes I wonder if I'm not taking this too personally, or I'm not seeing things, I'm not connecting dots that aren't there sometimes. We talked about that paradroia and aphasia, and no, I can't even think of the other word. But anyway, seeing things that aren't there. I do this. Sometimes the mind plays tricks. But here's the thing. It's a very specific fact that the grave out here near the studio that I had intended to take us all out to contains the body of a woman who committed suicide in 1915 by drinking carbolic acid. That's a pretty specific set of circumstances. And it is known, I mean, as a common means of poisoning in those days. I looked up carbolic acid suicide when I first found out she had done it. And there are plenty of references to it, but still it's a fairly specific set of circumstances. So when I realized we weren't taping the show that night, and I was just piddling around online, had a couple hours to burn, I thought, well, I'll go back to the family tree. I'll try and work up some Pollock genealogy. And I found that one of the newspaper indexes has just a few, scant number of issues of a newspaper from Lakeland, Florida, my hometown, in the 1890s. We had some family that had already come to Lakeland by 1890, and I thought a pretty good chance that maybe something will show up in the society columns, or somebody got arrested for drunken disorderly or something like that in this 1892 newspaper from my hometown. So I'm just searching the digital files for Pollock's in my hometown newspaper from, over 125 years ago. And I find this result, the very first result, The acid's deadly work. Fatal mistake at a social gathering in Pennsylvania. Pottstown, January 11th, 1892. There was a dramatic termination to a gay social gathering here Saturday night. Of course, gay meant something totally different in those days. In a happy, a gala affair, a large number of young people had gathered at the home of Myers Pollock, and the fun ran high. All went merrily until it was time for the wine. Then Nathan Pollock, the aged father of Myers Pollock, took a bottle, poured out a cup of the liquid, raised it, and proposed a toast for his son and the company. He drained the glass and groaned aloud. The liquid was carbolic acid, which he, partially blind, had mistaken for wine. Pollock was dead in less than half an hour.
Oh, that's horrible.
So I took that rather personal. And I thought, who has, who's been drinking carbolic acid around here? This lady that I was supposed to be visiting with tonight. And I think that she was saying, hey, why didn't you come see me? This could happen to you. No, I did feel that it, a kind of a threatening, ominous vibe to it. And then I thought again, what is the connection here? How do we connect the dots? I began to entertain the idea that Claude Calloway killed himself.
You think?
He had two failed marriages. First wife had died during the flu epidemic. Second wife had divorced him and couldn't provide for their children, gave their kids up for adoption. He was living back with his parents. His mother died in 1935. He was still accounted for then because he's mentioned as a survivor in her death notices, 1935. Shortly after that, he disappears. I'm thinking he had a lot of burdens, and he may have just slipped off into the woods up on the mountain there where they lived and done away with himself.
But, I mean, everything that you heard about that day, everything that Joshua said, I mean, well, first of all, he sounded like a much younger man.
Yeah.
He sounded like he was, what, in his late teens, early 20s or something. And that he was just having a wonderful day with his dad. He's sitting out on the porch reading his favorite magazine. His dad goes inside to make them a sandwich. And then the next thing you know, he's calling for his son. His son doesn't answer. And this, you know, community starts looking for this guy. But the picture, the picture.
Yeah, yeah, with his face
his whole,
obliterated, his
whole
face
head,
gone.
Right?
Yeah, that's the thing that makes this case so fascinating is just shortly before Claude Calloway disappeared, he had his photograph taken. And in the photograph, his head is missing. And you've seen old photographs where somebody turns their head real quickly, it blurs because the film speed and the shutter speeds were not what they are today. So it was really easy to blur an old picture in those days. But Josh described it to me. The actual photograph is no longer available. And Josh, we talked about this. Wouldn't know where to begin looking for it. It's just presumed gone because they're kind of parts of the family are estranged from other parts of the family. But Josh remembers holding the photograph in his hand and looking at it and says that you could clearly see the leaves on the tree in focus behind where his head should be.
Wow.
It was as if his face was just completely missing from the photograph, not just blurred out, missing. As he soon was.
Well, you know how to get the photograph, right? Just ask. I don't mean ask living people. I mean, ask your dead friends. They'll produce it for you. They'll find it for you.
We asked John Lyerly for some photographs the night we had the candle lit in here. Sheriff John Lyerly, who is one of our friendly guests. Well, he became our friend. He's kind of a cantankerous fella and a violent man in life, but a friend of ours now. We have to consider him our spirit friend. John Lyerly, I called on him when we had the candle lit and asked him for some more photographs. Well, The next week I was over at my uncle's house, and he said, oh, I've got something you're going to want to see. And he pulled out a photograph of my great-great-grandmother. Her name was Sookie. They called her Sookie. Ah, Sookie. But Susan, or Susanna. Sookie, if you ever hear that name for a girl, that was like a nickname for Susan. So a lot of Susans were Sookies in those days. So my great-great-grandmother Sookie, and I always heard about Sookie. Sookie died in about 1911, and here's the story that was passed down through our family. Actually, I talked to her daughter. My Aunt Minnie lived to be nearly 100 years old and was living over in Flag Pond, Tennessee. When I was working on that side of the family tree back in the 90s, I went to visit Aunt Minnie, who was my great-grandmother's youngest sister. And I said, do you have or does anyone have any photographs of your mother, Sookie? She said, we had one photograph of my mother, and it was in a frame in the mantle, and a gust of wind blew it into the fireplace. And we believe it was her spirit doing away. She didn't want people that didn't know her to even know what she looked like. So, and I had told the story. It's actually printed in a edition of one of Lloyd Bailey's genealogy books on the Tow River Valley, that Sookie Morrow's photograph, the last family photo of her, was blown into the fire and presumed destroyed by her spirit.
Wow.
And then the week after I asked John Lyerly for some photographs, I go over to my uncle's house. He says, I was over in Flag Pond, Tennessee, visiting one of our cousins who's now way up in years, and she said another woman even older than her distant cousin came over and handed her this photograph and said, here's a photograph of our grandparents, and here's a picture of my great-great-grandmother Sookie, whose last known photo was presumed burned in a fire at the urging of her spirit. Just like that.
Dead people are very, very helpful.
So John Lyerly put the word out. I was kind of thinking, John Lyerly, how about some more pictures of you? But John Lyerly did me a personal.
Did you a solid?
Yeah, he did. And provided me with a photograph of my great-great-grandmother, Sookie. So now I know what Sookie looks like, and she was beautiful. She really was beautiful.
And in a strange twist, my band plays a song called Sookie.
Yeah, it's Speaking of Strange, and that's what we do. That's how we roll. And we got more to come next hour. I want to school you folks on some of the legends and folklore of the Carolinas and how they lend themselves to ghost stories. It's an evergreen subject. Plenty of examples to come. We'll wrap up this hour after the break. Hang tight.
My mind's in neutral. Oh, she put the
speaking of strange, with Screaming Jay Hawkins putting a whammy on us, I have a feeling that a lady named Nola Swan put the whammy on me after I called her up with a seance candle and then stood her up out there at the cemetery.
You know what? We will take her flowers and we'll take her some chocolate.
I got to make it up
and,
to her
and
because
apologize.
Now
and
we
it'll
got a restless.
Okay.
Now we got a restless spirit.
Well, you got a restless spirit.
I got a restless spirit.
Yeah.
But
I can help you
she,
with that.
Yeah, you're going to have to help me deal with that. We got a restless spirit now. But I want to check in with her. I mean, I want to commune with her and see what it is that she could do for us, because I haven't really posed the question to her. But the idea that her son-in-law, Claude Calloway, who disappeared shortly after 1935, circa 1935, we'll say. He was gone by 1940 for sure. Yeah, I think maybe he offed himself. Because think about it. If you vanish off the planet, I mean, off the face of the earth, I mean, it's one thing if you disappear and resurface somewhere under a new identity. I've learned something by tracking cold cases like that. And I've tracked some really tough cold missing person cases and found out that the people went to another country, assumed another name. But clues, the paper trail, all these years later, if you're good enough at sifting through the paper trail, you'll find those people. I found not a trace of anyone who could have even been Claude Calloway. I think that Claude Calloway was dead and gone.
All right. Well, then think of this. Something's got to happen to his dead body. Mm-hmm. It makes you think that maybe somebody else knew what happened and hid it, disposed of it, kept the secret. I mean, there had to be somebody else. I mean, you're not going to.
Well, I mean,
don't you think?
Do you know you're a cat lover.
Mm-hmm.
You know when a cat senses that it's going to die,
yeah,
or an elephant, for instance, they go to their place to die. They go to their dying place. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, it's up under the house and you don't know where they are until you smell them.
Right.
But I think that it's possible where they live out in Ivy. I mean, there's very, very remote mountainsides. I think Claude Calloway's skeleton might be laying up behind a boulder on one of those mountainsides, or at the bottom of a waterfall, or who knows. I think he wandered off and did away with himself.
All we have to do is ask. Some dead person is going to tell you exactly. Some dead person is going to lead you right to where we need to go.
I know where his mother, I think that was the capper. I think the one that really pushed him over the edge was when his mother died. That would be Joshua P. Warren's great grandmother, and I've got the funeral notices for that. And here's the interesting thing: she's buried in a very remote cemetery, not next to her husband, but in a private family cemetery, the Burleson family cemetery. That was her maiden name. So she's buried out there with her ancestors in a little, you know, quarter acre lot. Josh says he thinks he knows where that cemetery is, that it's on some private property that he stood to inherit at one time. And it's very remote, and it's possible that on that same mountainside, on that same tract of property, is where Claude Calloway killed himself and was never found. I mean, I'm just speculating here at this point, but I'm speculating because the spirits have pointed me in that direction.
How far of a drive is it?
Oh, it's just out near Barnardsville. It's maybe half an hour.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You want to...
We got to confer with Josh. We got to get Josh on this field trip. When Josh hears this, if it really strikes his fancy, he'll want to go out there and tromp around in the briars and the bramble and find the cemetery where his great-grandmother's buried. She would be one that knows what happened to Claude better than anybody.
Why don't you ask her tonight? Why don't you light that candle? And
we saw what happened last time he snaked my candle.
Well, you have your very own candle now.
Yeah, but the scary thing was, and I'm not kidding around here, I was having some very, very dark thoughts after that. I was having thoughts of looking for my bottle of carbolic acid. And
ooh,
that's not like me. I mean, I'm generally pretty moody, but I was feeling some very, very dark vibes after that. Had me rattled, Shelley. You're going to have to help me.
I'll help you with that.
Work things out.
I will.
You open this can of worms.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
She's been known.
Speaking of strange, next hour, let's talk about some legends across the state that lend themselves to ghost stories. We'll be back. Stick tight.